good money if you consider over here, over here. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Session, 20-year comprehensive growth management plan.
Started the recording.
Okay. Okay. Good morning, commissioners. I think we are about ready to start. As some of the our city partners join us, they will be asked to sit at the table so that they can provide the commissioners with their own observation or input. You will have the opportunity to ask them questions. Commissioners, this morning there are four issues that we want to discuss with you. Some of them you've seen that before, so it will just be reviewing that one more time with the commissioners in preparation for the June 24th hearing, where you will take additional testimony before we provide you a resolution in effect affirming your decision. So this morning we are at a point that we want to begin discussion of the growth allocations. When I talk about growth allocations, I'm talking about the decisions that the commissioners have already made on population and jobs. We have been discussing the growth allocation with the cities since April of this year, and I will go into further details on what we've done. We may not all be in agreement, but we will share that with the commissioners, what, and the cities will share the concerns that they have, and then we can discuss on a path forward. What I will also discuss with the board is your 2016 principles and values, which is a guidance to staff to use in the 2016 update. I will also review the planning assumptions, which we have had two work sessions with the board on, so that you see what will be before you at the hearing on June 24th. And finally, this may not be an issue for the cities, but I will be discussing and asking the board to suspend the once a year plan amendment and dockets, and I will talk more about the implications of not doing so. So let me start with the what I would like to cover this morning. As I promised the commissioners, I said each time I show up here, I would like to remind the board that you will continue to see this slide until we move to column three. So the check areas are things that we've already completed. You see the arrow indicating what where we are and what is in progress. We have we are now at growth allocation. You've talked about planning assumptions. You have reviewed the buildable lands. This is two work sessions that you've had with our GIS staff. So that's what is in progress. Hopefully we'll be moving into within that same column, we'll be moving to plan development following the discussion on and the board approval of the growth allocation. The next slide shows the decisions that the board have made to date. This is just as for information. The board have already made a decision on the growth target. You made that decision on January 21st, 2014, which this reflects the OFM medium population number that you've asked us to choose or to use. You also made a decision on job target. This will be new jobs. You made that decision on April 1st, 2014, and agreed on a job to household ratio of 1 to 1. Since that decision, as I indicated, we have been discussing with the cities on the growth allocation and our methodology. How do we do? How do we go about doing that? I must say that, and the cities will agree, there are no prescribed methodology from the state statute on how you go about the growth allocation, none. This is something where the county, in this case Clark County, and our city partners will have to be working together and agreeing on methodology. And what staff have done is to follow almost what we have been doing since 1994, if you will. I've laid out three options. These are options that the board may consider and the city and the county may consider. The option one, it says, just do the allocation by placing growth where it has historically occurred within the urban growth boundaries, as documented by the U.S. Census. That's one option. The second option is allocating growth by UGA based on the vacant and buildable lands model plus, and I emphasize plus, the potential capacity for jobs and population by considering redevelopment, infill, areas that are currently vacant or we have vacancies, if you will. That's another way that we can do the allocation. And the third option is basically just simply allocating growth by UGA based on the output of our vacant and buildable lands model. And that's how we've done it since 1994. There are other issues that we consider, but that's the method we have been using. In this presentation, I'll be focusing on methodology number three. We've also included in the next slide additional guidelines, if you will, or issues we have to consider regardless of whichever method we choose. I would like the board to focus on bullet number four, which says use estimate of the existing VBLM capacity for growth of the UGAs to inform decisions or decision makers on allocation of growth target. Bullet 5 says you continue using the inventory of available VBLM information, a practice used in 94, 04, and 07. And bullet 6 says we also have to allow for some flexibility, and we've had this conversation before, what does that mean? But it will enable cities the opportunity to look at their own future and how they would like to grow and bring that to the table as well. So for what I may call the preliminary outcome of following method 3, here's how the following slide shows how we did the allocation. This is basically based on, again, using method 3, looking at what the vacant buildable lands run of 2014 showed us, and then allocating that growth based on the proportionate share by UGA. And you can see here that for each of the cities, we've shown them what their numbers will look like in terms of that method. That's what is shown on column 3.
Well, Oliver, if I might, we reference UGA a lot here. One of the things that we have today that we didn't have in 1994 was the ability to do our GIS overlay to really identify what we call buildable lands. And to our rude awakening, we're finding nearly 50% is not buildable and has to be used for something else. So when we talk about the urban growth boundary, it's something we need to look at very closely if we, in our predictions of what we're going to do for growth and job creation.
That's true, and that's why we are very careful in, and I will talk to this as I go on, and that is a recognition, and staff have been discussing this same issue with the cities, and that is that when we use the VBLM, it is the best tool that we have, we do recognize that we do underestimate what is actually available and what is buildable. We recognize that. Yes, Commissioner.
Sure. I like the third option that you presented here, how is we've been doing it in the past. However, a potential modifier there is we want to make sure that we also have the freedom to do what makes sense when it comes to the urban growth boundary. If we just simply say, well, it's just simply going to be fixed in concrete, we're not going to move it, then we go up in density and it says we just got to constrain ourselves to just increase our density. And I want to make sure that we don't necessarily make that artificial constraint to put that upon ourselves, but instead be able to look at also the buildable land where the slopes of the land, the critical preservation of those areas that need to be preserved that are not truly buildable, if it requires us to be able to have rational, normal, balanced density, and that requires more acreage than what's inside that boundary, then the natural logical conclusion is that we will consider moving that out in order to provide that and meet that need, that commitment that we made to provide for true land for jobs.
That is true, and that's exactly what we are doing, and we are asking the cities to provide us their best information in terms of reviewing that work and identifying where the pluses or minuses may occur in terms of how we are using that model and what we are identifying as vacant and buildable. Again, I will emphasize that we all recognize that using that model has some flaws. I will be the first to acknowledge that. I would say too that the model do underestimate what is actually happening, but you've seen over the last series of work sessions that Bob Poole have presented, you've seen over time areas where we said it goes both ways, areas we said that won't develop that have actually developed, areas we said will develop haven't developed. So again, if you look at it, I would say that yes, we do acknowledge that the model do underestimate the true capacity going one way or the other depending on how you look at it.
True, and much of that was predicted that it would not develop because we had designated them as critical lands, because they were wetlands, and so we're compromising that land in order to somehow build on it anyway, which to me says we're not necessarily following the intent of the Growth Management Act, that is to preserve those areas, that environment, without building over it. So if it means, if we have to choose between the two, either build in those areas which we more responsibly would preserve the environment, or provide more adequate space so we don't have to do that, I would think that we would at least not lock ourselves into that first one.
That's true, Commissioner. So this first table shows how the allocation was done using the third method. I would say that the numbers that you see here, we've been discussing this with the cities, this really truly does not show the true capacity of what could be accommodated within the existing UGA. They know that, and the cities can speak to that issue. As I said, it can go both ways. There are known areas we know there is potential, and the city of Vancouver can speak to that. I'm glad that Brian is on the table here, there are areas where, for example, the port of Richfield is now reclaiming, cleaned up. In the past we said that area is not available, but they've reclaimed that and now they will develop that and add jobs which weren't in the model. The same is true for majority of the waterfront development that the city of Vancouver is pushing. We've looked at that area and said it's, we're looking at it as built. So a lot of redevelopment will occur here. The question is timing, but what the cities are saying is that we have to acknowledge that those redevelopment will occur, and there are some vacancies that we are not taking into consideration when we rely solely on the VBLM. So I get that, and we are having that conversations with the city, and they want us to recognize that as well. What I'm presenting you to you here is how we've done the allocation, and the cities will probably have a say to that, but this underestimates what the true capacity is. I want to make that very clear.
Ask you a question.
Yes, Commissioner.
Under your three options that you have listed up there, under the third option, it talks about the allocation of growth of based on the vacant buildable land. Do you actually spell it out as industrial land, the percentage of industrial? I notice you have residential in here, but I didn't see anything that says how much land is going to be set aside for industrial, how much is going to be set aside for commercial, and how much is going to be set aside for residential. I think if, in my mind, if you do it that way, the public would be better able to understand if their property was going to be used for industrial, commercial, or residential type development than that. So, but basically what I see so far, it's all based on, a lot of it's based on residential type building.
That gets me to the second table, Commissioner. The way that the model works, we are taking what is currently planned for residential, what is currently planned or area planned for industrial development and commercial development, and then we run the model on that and said, okay, here's the areas we've identified for commercial, industrial, you name it. There are three type or more than three types of land use we look at. Of that, what is available for development? So that information, I can share that with you. That's how this was done. So the public already know what their property is on and planned for. The question is, how much of that is available for development, and how much of what can that land accommodate in terms of jobs and residential development? That's how this came about in terms of the table that is in front of you. So,
can you do that by areas in Clark County?
Yes, everywhere in Clark County, all the urban growth areas. We can also estimate taking that further to the rural area based on the current zoning and the potential of additional lot that could be created in the rural area. What would that do in terms of capacity? All that work is done, and we can make it available to the public. If I can move to the employment, which is the second table, we follow the same approach using method three. And when I discussed this with the cities, I said, you know, take this as what I call the peanut butter approach. You have a slice of bread, and there are really space within that slice of bread. Take your peanut butter and try to really, you know, plaster that, if you will, fill it up. If you determine, that's the first thing you do, if you determine that there is still room that haven't been filled up, let's talk among ourselves and see who gets what. So it's just visualize that that's really what we are doing. And we also say that within that there are some areas where we are not picking up because our vacant land model is not a true measure of through measure of capacity. So for table two, we've done a similar thing, and there were some issues that were considered in 07 that the cities would like us also to consider. I could have done this thing, the same footnote. I could have put that same footnote on table one. The footnote here, I think I want the board to pay particular attention to that. This is what I was saying earlier, that there are some capacities that are not captured in the vacant lands model. And if those were included, like jobs occurring on area we said we won't occur, if we take the waterfront, for example, and the areas that the Port of Richfield have cleaned up and potentially has the opportunity to create more jobs, that if we add all those up plus the public sector job, we have a capacity more than the 91,200 jobs that the board have asked us to plan for. What this table on table 2, what column 2 shows is, again, using the output of the BBLM, that we can accommodate about 85,000 jobs within the existing boundary following that dead method. And we recognize that the public sector job doesn't really need land. They can occur in existing buildings and so forth. So if you were to add the total, it will exceed the job total that we are planning for. So that's my summary of the way that the allocation was done. I'll stop there before and take questions and have the cities weigh in before we move to the planning assumptions. So I'm waiting for questions and having the opportunity for the cities to weigh in.
At this time, I'd like to hear from the cities, I guess. Pros, cons, good, bad. How are we doing? Are we on target? We've had these.
Good morning, Commissioners. Robert Mall, City of Camas. You know, from our perspective, you know, we've been pretty comfortable with how these projections have. We've been working closely with Auburn and his staff, and you know, we really don't have anything additional to add. I mean, there's been some spirited debate back and forth, but I think it's ultimately representative of what we feel Camas can accommodate. So.
Great. Well, I'll jump in. Eric Eisman, representing the city of Richfield, with me is also, and the center is Elizabeth Decker. We're both working on, as consultants for both of those jurisdictions. And let me get to that. Sorry about that. We have a slightly different take in North County, and although we're big fans of the VBLM and the computer capacities and, that the county has right now, it's excellent. We've learned a lot from those analyses that have been done, particularly as they relate to critical areas. The issue that Oliver's been talking about, spreading the peanut butter out on a piece of bread, the analogy, if I can carry it out just a little bit further, is that if you look at those numbers, and Oliver has said that the model has some flaws, there's some overs and unders, but there's not enough bread, basically, to spread the peanut butter out. When you look at what happens in La Center and you look at what happens in Ridgefield, both of those jurisdictions in their own ways have taken some significant steps to invest in capacity based on the 2007 plan. For example, La Center's treatment plant, Ridgefield working with the district right now to accommodate the numbers from those plans. When you look at some of the numbers on the other slide, you see that what really happens in those two jurisdictions is that there is a reduction in population in both from the 2007 plan. Our concern is that we haven't really talked about what the consequences are. Do those consequences, will they be intended or unintended consequences, and do they actually make sense, as you said, Commissioner? And we're not sure that we've dived into this deeply enough to understand. For example, if our population allocation is less than what we planned for in 2007, what do we have to do? Do we lose part of our UGA? As a result of that, is that what we're intending to do? Do we have to take land that we had thought we might use for residential and turn it into something else? We haven't had the opportunity to really dive that deeply into it, but we do believe that the model, if it were adopted today and those numbers were hard and fast, could set up a legal challenge for our jurisdictions. And so we are concerned about that.
So far, our communication is to invite your feedback and say what works for your community and let us know, mm-hmm. because the legal challenge sounds like it would be something that Ridgefield would want and the commissioners would insist in something different, and that's we're not adversaries, we're friends.
Exactly.
And so we're asking you, how can we serve you? What do you want to be able to do for your community?
Well, in the case of, for example, both Ridgefield and La Center, we'd like to know if we do take a lower population allocation, what is the count? How will we coordinate with the county? How will we be consistent with the county's plan? Is it the county's desire to shrink UGAs or not? We would prefer not to do that, obviously. We don't think you want to do that either. So we need to think very carefully about what that number is going to be that each of our jurisdictions get. For example, the 2007 plan, we are whole right now in both those jurisdictions in terms of residential population. The center has a problem with industrial lands, obviously, because we lost so much after the 2007 appeal. So that number, which we initially supported, the number that we've adopted right now, as we dive into a little deeper, says we've got some problems here that we didn't anticipate, and I'm sorry, and we take responsibility for not anticipating them. Is it possible that those two cities keep the numbers that they had back in the 2007 plan so that they don't set themselves up for a potential outcome we don't want?
I think that's the intent, that there's flexibility there. And certainly the cities, you are really in the driver's seat that would inform us, how do you want it to work? And let us know and assume that there's going to be you're going to get what you ask for. No guarantee, but we certainly invite that and really want to know how can we accommodate.
Okay.
I would put some boundaries on that, and that is we also have a responsibility to ensure that the intent behind the GMA is fulfilled, and that is that the basic there is that we preserve what we're supposed to be preserved when it comes to our environment, but also that we responsibly build infrastructure to grow as we develop. So, for instance, if a city, this is hypothetical, decided that they're going to have a philosophy that high density is really the good way to go, and they're going to overtax their road system, and then they're not going to provide sufficient parking. They're going to assume transit-oriented development, which we don't have in, like Portland has here, in order just simply to not invest and not provide for adequate roadways and adequate parking and that kind of long-term sustainability. Certainly, we would have to look at that and say, well, we have standards, concurrency, road capacity, all of those that need to be met. And we need to make sure that we assume that the cities will also look at that and share that same intent of fulfilling that. So the idea there, provide the infrastructure, provide the roads, provide the parking, provide the quality of life, so that we don't end up building something that our people down the road won't hate us for. Think, what were they thinking?
And I take your point, and it's a good point. And what we will do and have done in the past in our cities is develop our capital facilities plan to serve the jobs and the population allocation that we have, or that will be in your plan and will be in our plan. And you will all look at those capital facilities plans to make sure that we're accommodating what you're asking for. And those are good asks. And again, in the case of La Center, based on the 2007 plan, they invested a huge amount of money in a state-of-the-art water treatment plant, sewer treatment plant. And if this allocation is such, the allocation, if it's spread evenly across the bread and peanut butter, the city can't pay for it. Can't spread the cost of that out. And so that's a problem.
That's the assumption, is that we're not assuming that every city is going to be exactly proportional. Yeah. Each city knows their city. Each jurisdiction knows their jurisdiction, has their own vision for their future, and the county is really the shock absorber to handle what you don't want for each of your jurisdictions. So the question is, let us know what you want, and it'll be our responsibility to, as best we can, to accommodate the cities and then compensate for the unincorporated areas what isn't met there in the cities, I assume. I'm speaking as one commissioner.
Yeah, we're not going to micromanage. We want your input. That's what you say. And what we've learned, for the most part, the urban growth boundaries, by request, not really being changed. Your density is your choice. Ridgefield is one of the fastest growing residentials mm-hmm. that we've had in the county by far, and has a good sized urban growth boundary and industrial area. So very, very successful. Yeah. I see where Ridgefield or the centers had some issues. Probably more targeted than anything else. It'd be really interesting to see an overlay of the expanded urban growth boundary, what they really have for buildable lands would be very interesting, but that's something they need to come back and share with us. We have that available for them through our GIS.
And we're using them on a regular basis.
Great.
It would be also interesting and informative for us to be able to know what assumptions is the center making when it comes to the big tribe casino out there. That has so much to do with the future of the center.
I can, if that's a rhetorical question, I can leave it alone.
No, it's actually a real question.
Okay. Le Centre's comprehensive plan is set up that if the federal government imposes that out there, Le Centre has adopted policies which are being challenged, which would allow the city to serve a federal tribal area. If not, Le Centre has a UGA that's hemmed in by agricultural lands with no ability really to expand. And it's going to have to find a different way to accommodate jobs, because it's put its eggs into the jobs basket at the freeway, and that's where the land is. And so we're going to have to look for other lands inside the city.
And I would encourage you to have option A and option B, because
exactly.
That could or could not happen out there.
That's right. And that's what we're doing.
It seems like to me it wouldn't make any difference whether it's tribal interest or whether it's Facebook or somebody else that could be coming out into an area like that. If I don't want to see any restrictions if the land is certified for industrial, commercial, or residential. I think that we need to make sure we can't afford to give any more jobs across the river. Right now, Intel's the fifth largest employer on this side of the river. When they finish its next two phases, they're going to be either number one or number two. So whatever we can do in order to make sure that we provide the land necessary to provide, whether it's the tribe, whether it's one of these social media outfits that want to move into an area in Clark County, just like we did with Wafer Tech when we opened up to make sure that we didn't lose Wafer Tech. I was part of that, and I would hope that we don't do something that would end up penalizing people in Clark County.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Thank you.
It really does make a significant difference what happens there with that tribe, with that casino, because the way I see it is like taking a cookie cutter and taking a hole in our map where none of us accommodate it at all, because that's a sovereign nation. It won't be part of Le Centre or Clark County. It's a sovereign nation, a hole in a map, and none of us take any account for any of those numbers, right, if that happens.
That's very true. And they will get their power from a source, and they will provide their own sewer with an outfall on the East Fork, or get it somewhere else through the district or the center.
Yes.
Or Richfield.
And provide.
I think they're using Richfield's capacity.
I'm sorry?
They'd be using Richfield's capacity. That's their dream anyway.
And provide.
That's what their agreements are.
Zero tax revenue.
Exactly.
In
right.
Any jurisdiction.
No, I agree. It's an elephant in the room.
Vancouver?
We just have a couple of kind of quick points, and I'll leave you with a letter too, sort of not, it doesn't go into a whole lot of detail, but just sort of on a few broad principles that we wanted to just kind of briefly talk about. Again, really support this inclusive process of being able to sit up here. This is the most inclusive of the updates that I've been involved with, and I've been involved in all of them since the GMA. As a starting point, we support sort of the allocation that Oliver was talking about as a starting point. I think until the capacity numbers are known, though, it's probably a little hard to finalize the exact allocations, and there may need to be adjustments at the end of the process, or maybe even as you draw the maps now to address some of the issues that Eric was talking about. So I think just be aware that you're in terms of the allocation, you have the ability to make some of those adjustments to move some from here or there, and perhaps even at the end of the process, if you need to avoid the scenario that Eric was talking about of population, you could even slightly raise at the end the population forecast. I guess our sort of driving concern in this update is let's have the land use policy that you decide dictate and not the math. So you may need to make some adjustments to the math at the end to catch up and make things whole. But at this point, when a broad scenario is going to be drawn, we would hate those to be drawn by a math argument without the policy implications. So in terms of the development assumptions, obviously, which drive the capacity estimates, we support what essentially has been discussed in the proposal on the table of using the existing development assumptions. They're imperfect, some of them, but I think taken together, they balance each other out and produce a reasonable estimate. They have improved from each stage of each of the prior updates. And I think an important part of that, as Oliver noted and noted in Table 2, is part of that capacity is redevelopment. And so that's essentially the assumptions for when buildings are either replaced, enlarged, or the same building stays the same way and it's filled with more employees. Or it could be a larger parking lot that the vacant lands model might not consider vacant, has a building put on it. That also is redevelopment. So over time, it's a substantial number. And so it's also part of the existing set of assumptions. It's part of what the board in 2007 adopted. And so what I'll leave you with is their actual letter talking about that. And so we think it's appropriate that be included in the capacities. Again, at this stage, we can revisit some of those, but we think all of these assumptions together balance out pretty well. Now, if the assumptions are to be reopened, I think there's a couple of areas we do think there's new data pointing to some updates. But at this point, we're I think hoping to move forward with the existing set of development assumptions and begin the process of actually drawing scenarios. Sort of a broader point about as you consider land supply, we would certainly urge caution in using the assumptions to try and pad or add to the land supply in any way that's data doesn't clearly dictate is needed. And the concern here is that when you do that, that a better approach, if you want more land for jobs, is to use the allocations and the forecasts, because then those numbers get plugged into the capital facilities plans. Mm-hmm. One of the experiences here, particularly in the first update in the 90s, is that there was a very generous set of assumptions with the idea of, hey, let's provide plenty of land. At that point, the market factors were at the highest levels contemplated under the GMA. The infrastructure assumptions, I think, in the first go-round were around 40% in many cases. And so we're convinced at least that was part of the reason there was a lot of unplanned and underserved growth, is that growth occurred on lands assumed not to develop that was added with good intentions. And so we would urge you as you consider these issues, again, let the land use policy drive your process and not to there is a cost, a real cost for padding the land supply in a way that's not needed in capital facilities and particularly in transportation with the transportation model. Again, comfortable with the existing set of assumptions. If they are to be reopened, there are a couple which we think new data clearly points to an update. And so if that's going to be the process, we can talk about those. But on balance, the existing assumptions are good. I think we need to have the ability to adjust, which you do under the Act, to avoid the scenario Eric talked about. And any questions about redevelopment or what was adopted, I can happy to answer those.
Yeah, I believe we are there, and we have landed on those assumption numbers.
Great.
And so we kind of put it back in your ballpark to see if they fit your plan and what part of that fits you. Yeah. And that's what you've come back and told us so far, is that they're looking good, the numbers are looking good, you agree on on what you want for our urban growth boundary. And so that's where we are. So if we're not there, then I need to hear something a little bit more clear as to what Richfield wants, I guess. You're shaking your head.
No, I'm shaking my head because I'm still not convinced that we have settled on, we know what the outcomes are going to be in terms of what happens with each jurisdiction. And I agree with Brian completely, if we're following a mathematical exercise and not looking at the map, I think we might be in trouble. And so, we could, as a policy, decide that no jurisdiction shall be made less whole than they were in the final 2007 allocation, after all the lawsuits where everything was all taken care of. And that might allow us some security in our mind to know that, okay, we're not going to find ourselves waking up at the end of this long exercise with something less than we started.
And I think when you shared with us, it's a flexible tool. But when we look out over 20 years, it's really a guessing thing. So what we do is the best of our ability to use the information that we get from the Office of Finance Management from the state, and that gives us different choices to choose from, and then you get to fit that into your communities.
Yes, and
the policy.
I agree, and the policy that I just made up right now would do that. And what I'm suggesting is that maybe we need to put some policy language, some tools in the toolbox to make sure that the unintended consequences don't happen. We're talking a lot about flexibility, which I applaud,
absolutely,
but we're not talking about what tool we'll use to ensure the flexibility. So I just offered it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's all of our intent.
Yeah, I mean, just one brief point, and I don't mean to interject because it's not my time, but one option could be you could, in the values and principles that the board is considering, you could have a don't shrink the UGAs policy.
That'd be up to you. If you wanted to shrink your...
In terms of the proposals, no. Vancouver isn't proposing that. We're not proposing that.
Oh, okay. I didn't think so.
But ultimately, the decision rests with the board, and that kind of a policy could give Eric and others concerned about somehow a mathematics sort of, somebody would say, oh, you need to shrink, that would not be a policy.
And we'd probably do that in our shorter term of comprehensive planning. But this here is...
flexibility clause.
Yeah, and we intend to do that, and so Oliver, I guess I tasked that back to you to make sure that it's flexible. We recognize the changes along the way, and we will do that if we have long-term or short-term comprehensive planning.
That's true, Commissioners. What we have asked the cities to, we gave them two deadlines. One is July 10th. To propose to the county what their land use options will be, and then I think we gave them July 30th to give us what their final land use plan is going to be. And we want to be able to, I'm not rushing the cities, but I don't also want to be 1 or 2 months behind, because we don't have the luxury we used to have going to the end of the year. This plan has to be completed and adopted by June 30th, 2016. In terms of a path forward, I get what issues that the City of Richfield and the Center are raising. And I don't want to go there, but one path forward could be that and we recognized this when we had our first work session with the board. We show you what the numbers look like. When the board made the decision to go for the OFM medium, which all the cities supported, Eric is right, we didn't anticipate the potential implications of that. Now we are looking at how do we allocate that growth, and realizing that it's much smaller than what the current boundary was based on. One path forward could be, and I'm putting it out there until I see what comes out of the City of Richfield and the Center, one path forward could be we can return to what the population target was in 2007. The board can move the goalpost to 2035. That's one option. The other option is for the cities to come to the table with what their land use will look like, and we'll review that and see what type of adjustments that we make. This is reiterative process, and we all acknowledge that. What I would not like to see happen is, as Eric cleverly indicated, is to expose any city to a potential lawsuit or challenge, if you will. But we shouldn't be planning on the fear that we may be challenged. I want to put that out there. I want to make sure that we are following the directive from the commissioners, and we are coordinating to the best we can with the cities. I want, at the end, everyone to support what is it that we did. So that's what I'm putting out there. I'm still expecting the cities to get back to me on July 10th with their preliminary land use plan, so that we can be gearing internally here on when I get to the next step, because we have to take that as draft as it may be, hopefully get to a final, which could also change, but we have to begin conversation with the public on the three options. What does that look like? Does it rise to a level of what level of environmental review do we have to do? And I'm putting the burden on the cities. You know, if you submit a land use that is totally radical, you will be the one supporting that with your CFP. And if you decide to expand the boundary for, in the case of the Center for Jobs, you have to do the associated environmental review before you submit it to the county. So, but I give them that opportunity to come back to the county with what their land use options will be. At the end of the day, you hear me often talk about these puzzles that we have to put together and see what the picture looks like. I like using those type of...
Oliver, I think I'm sensing that we're looking at a 20-year plan.
Yes.
That changes with every comprehensive plan. So when we look at that, I think that we want to make sure that we recognize the 20-year plan as being very, very flexible, as well as the short-term comprehensive planning. And I think that's what, you know, we can guess and things change. We want to make sure as we draw it up that it's flexible.
And that's true. One last comment from me, but at the end of the day, we are required by the state statute to make sure that we have 20-year land supply anytime we do this work.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. So much of this ends up, the bottom line, the implementation of this ends up being the map. And the flexibility that we're offering to, and really wanting to serve, provide to each of the jurisdictions as allies, really can also be viewed as a recipe for chaos. If we don't have standards, if we don't have metrics, if we don't have some kind of tools that would allow us to collaborate so that we end up with order and planning and foresight that allows us to be able to be on the same page. GIS is a very important player in this, and that is that we need to be able to make sure that we are all able to view that map and view the infrastructure and the commitments that are, that implies. So we need to be able to make sure that is viewable. That is, the tools are there, the ability to view, and to be able to somehow allow each city to paint their areas as necessary. So the UGA follows, it doesn't lead this process. So we need to be able to come up with some of those standards, and we welcome the cities to be able to provide your own feedback as to how we can be on the same page. For instance, four basic categories. One is employment land that has to do with both either the industrial heavy, where you affect your neighbors because of the operations there, and clean, which is commercial, light industrial, where you don't care what happens inside the building. They could be doing light assembly, or they could be doing chiropractic or dental service. So those two categories, what kind of employment land? Do the neighbors care about what happens in there, or do neighbors not care? The other is residential, high-density residential versus low-density residential, so that we can have, at a glance, we have some standards. We can all look at that and understand what that translates to on the map, because each jurisdiction has their own codes, their own colors, their own definitions of zoning. That's different than the rest. We're not on the same page there. So that would allow us to be able to have some common language that we can speak and terms that we can use. Also, the standards when it comes to what assumptions are there for parking spaces for each of those categories that needs to be provided for. And we need to make sure that we all are able to agree on those metrics. So how do we maximize flexibility and not end up with chaos? With metrics and with standards. And those are something that, if we're going to serve all as allies and collaborate, we need to be able to agree on those. And that needs to be defined. If we got a July 10 draft date, that might be a little aggressive here. The first thing that I believe that we need to be able to come up with is this common language that we all need to speak.
I agree, and I'll look to the city of Richfield and the center to provide us any tool or language that they would like to see perhaps incorporated, and that's where the flexibility issue comes in again. So Battleground, any concerns that they want to share with the commissioners?
Erin Erdman, representing City of Battleground. kind of mimic everything that's been said. We agree with the methodology and how we've come to this point, and you know, we don't have any major concerns at this point, but also want to mimic that how that affects us as an individual city is yet to be seen. And so we do, I appreciate the term of flexibility when looking at that, because we don't know how that's going to shake out, and we as well don't want to have to, you know, lose from what we started from. So.
All right.
Okay, with that, I will conclude this conversation on allocation. I'll look to Richfield and LaCenter to provide us any new tools if we can accomplish that by language or policy. As the City of Vancouver indicated, I will also allow for flexibility if we have to, you know, nothing is cast in stone. If we have to adjust the population target, that option should also be on the table. Okay,
right.
So that moves me to the second issues that I want to discuss with the board. This is what you are going to see at the June 24th hearing. And the purpose is for the board to take testimony on the highlighted, yellow highlighted areas. The gray areas, the board have already made decisions on, both at hearing and throughout the processes. So that's the way to look at, these are the planning assumptions that we're going to use for the 2016 plan update. So again, the way to look at it is that the gray areas, the board have already made decisions on. The yellow highlighted areas are the areas that the board will take testimony. And potentially out of that, if there are no changes, which is what I'm hearing from the cities, we will then include that in the final resolution that the board is going to be approving. Go back to the first slide. So you have the urban and rural population split. Again, you can see how that has been used over the years that we've gone through the planning update. At this point, I don't have any new data to show that ratio ought to change. It got, talking about consensus, when the cities are saying, you know, we don't want to expand our boundary and we don't want to shrink our boundary, this plays a significant role to that decision. But you will probably take testimony on that to affirm that that's, you want to maintain that 90-10 split. The second yellow highlighted area is the housing type ratios. This states that 75% of new development will be single family and 25% multi-family. This should be viewed in terms of no one housing type should be more than the other, so not to exceed. That's how this should be read. The next slide. There have been concern about the infrastructure, residential infrastructure deduction or set aside due to the new stormwater regulations. I think the latest information or data that I've been able to collect both from the cities and our environmental services as well as our GIS staff appear to support the 27.5 or 27.7 in terms of land set aside due to stormwater and other utilities. But you take testimony on this, and I'm hoping that this will be the case.
Over.
If this, yes, commissioners.
On your previous slide.
Yes.
Backup one. That 90-10 and that 75-25. We haven't discussed any of the implications or what is how that those numbers at all. I wouldn't think that something as fundamental as these basic numbers, we would just simply adopt them without even considering what happens when we move up or down on those ratios. So I don't think we're ready to talk about, to adopt those numbers, because we have not considered the what happens when they change.
I know commissioners have had two work sessions on planning assumptions in which and the board did approve this at the last work session, which was, when was that? I believe it was in Mayor, yes, the board approved that. All I'm doing here is sharing with you that our legal counsel said you have to take testimony in order to formally include that in a resolution. But you've seen this two or three times, and I'm hearing from the cities that they are in support of this assumption. So if the board needs new information, I can provide the board, and I did in my last two work sessions, what the current ratio showed is very close to the 90-10. But I can provide, yes.
And I recall we did have work sessions on that.
Yes.
Yet the bar is higher for my standard to be able to understand when we adopt a number. I feel like the understanding in my own mind needs to be more than it is now, even with that work session. So I'll spend some one-on-one time with you to make sure that this is really well thought out in my own mind, so that before I adopt it, then I'll have confidence.
Sure. I will schedule something quickly with you to do that. The ratio of 75-25 is something that the cities have all agreed to, was consensus discussed since 2004, and I shared with the board when we had the work session, the ratio was 60-40, and we recognize that that's really a high bar, that none of the cities were meeting 60-40. Some areas, this is where I will come to the defense of Richfield, they will not be able to meet 60-40 in terms of single family, multi-family. All the cities and the county discussed this extensively and agreed on the ratio that you see here, and I've kept that 75-25 ratio in 04 and 07. I can tell you that some cities are very close to this ratio. I may not want to change it now. It's a goal. So the cities are here and they can speak for themselves. I know that the city of Vancouver, for instance, exceeding the 75-25 ratio, but that's because of the historical multi-family that have developed in the city, and more that they're developing are coming online. So they are more than the 75-25 ratio. I know the other cities have decided that they will get to that point. This is a 20-year plan, and we've agreed that they can get to that by, in the case of multi-family, no one is dictating to the city to build multi-family. We said you can, this was agreed to, you can get to that by offering townhouses, condominiums, triplex and duplex, and they all agreed to that. So, but I'm saying that this yellow highlighted areas, you will probably take testimony on that and affirm that moving forward. But we have had extensive discussion with the board on this. Next slide. The other area, as I mentioned, is the infrastructure deduction. This only shows the residential infrastructure deduction is 27.5, 27.7. The commercial and industrial infrastructure deduction is 25%. So when you combine the two, it's more than 50%. That's the way to look at it. This only shows the board the residential infrastructure deduction. And we are really, I've asked the cities, if you have any new data that will substantiate this going up, please inform the county and we will consider that. The information that have come from the smaller cities, because they were the ones, if you will, who started building and developing according to the new reg. The county is just coming on board. We are updating our own stormwater regulations to comply with the new reg. So we don't have anything new or something that we can say inform us to change this number. And I share that with the board.
You're saying these numbers are the normal, not extreme one way or the other.
Yes, there will. Yeah, yes, Commissioner. There will be some areas that this is an average. There will be some areas that you'll see 30%. There will be some areas that you'll see 25-10%. It varies, but on average, this is what we're saying makes sense, and we are within that range. I share with the commissioners, other communities, that their infrastructure deduction for stormwater and others is 5%, 10%. Well, that's a function that on average some areas percolate better than others, you know, but that's the case. So on average, this is there's data to support this. The other area that I've had extensive discussion with the board, and Bob Poole also was the one looking at this, is the how we define what is vacant and the values that we use. Bob, I've been really working very hard. This, we have maintained these values since 04. We admit that this needs to be adjusted, but we don't have good information to adjust that, and Bob is still working with the GIS, with the assessor's office, and at some point, whether in this go round or in the next go round, if we have better information, we'll adjust those values. And that's what Bob have asked me also to say. The last one, the reason I highlighted the last one is the market factor. You can see there that the board have asked us to retain the 10% for residential but add 10% for commercial and industrial. So we've done that, and these are areas that the board will take testimony and firm this up at the June 24th hearing. So the next slide shows you if you, after the hearing, if you agree with all the planning assumptions and with the support of the cities, this is how it's going to show in your adopting resolution. That's how this is, that's why this is here. Next slide. Now, I left the board principles and values. This is another guide, you know, guiding principles that the board have discussed extensively. It's a one-page. I left this for you. It's a one-page. If the board wants to make any changes to this, this is the outcome of the two or three work sessions we had on principles and values. It's just, you're not required by GMA to have this. It's just a guiding principle. It talks about what the board would like staff, including the cities, to consider in terms of employment, land, housing, community design, rural lands, and other land uses. At the back is tax base, mapping implications, as we talked about. And then finally, the allocation. This is your guiding principle to staff, not only Clark County, but the cities, in what to consider as part of the guidance for both mapping and the alternatives that we're going to consider. So that's that. I will stop there and take questions and have the cities weigh in before I go to my request to have the board suspend the 2015 and 16 annual review. So let's have conversation and have the cities weigh in on the planning assumptions as well as the board principles and values.
All right, Eric.
Sorry, say it. Yes. I think I don't want to say too much because I think I already did. I mean, basically, we're comfortable on balance with the existing planning assumptions. Some probably do need an update, and if you do want to reopen them, that we'd probably bring a couple of ideas forward. As mentioned, these have been evolved over time and improved over time. A lot of discussion and debate about them. So we on balance are comfortable with the existing assumptions, and again would caution against looking at the costs of adding extra of padding the assumptions for a land use reason. That if you do want more land, the transparent approach, which you've taken by adopting an aggressive jobs forecast, that's probably the way to go, because then it gets incorporated into the capital facilities plans.
Right. Very good. Any other comment? I know Oliver put a lot of work into that. Pulled out everything we possibly could. Go ahead.
I was, just very briefly, and that is that we endorse the assumptions completely with one little recommendation, and that is going back to what I said earlier, under the allocation area, if we wanted to adopt a principle and value that no jurisdiction's UGA will be shrunk as a result of this, we would be very happy.
We can add that to other land use, whatever you would like to see that added, you can provide me a language and we can add that in what we present to the commissioners on the 24th.
If I could add one point, too, I just briefly forgot to mention. In terms of the existing assumptions, part of that is the existing redevelopment assumption. So I mean, we're pleased that that's included in the table, and we think that should be carried forward because it is an existing assumption. It's less than what Vancouver asked for in the last update. Again, you know, we can reopen it if we want, but I don't know that that's productive. So the assumptions that the PRASP board adopted for redevelopment, I think we're comfortable going forward with.
Okay. So I'll ask Eric to provide me whatever language will add to the board principles and values as guiding as guidance for us to use. Okay. That gets me to the last and this is just something that I would like the board to seriously consider. I am asking that we suspend the 2015 and 2016 annual review. The statutes here, what I've done here is state what the statutes, this come out of the statute. It says that under RCW 3670A, which is the Growth Management Act, itself codified Section 132 mandates that county cannot update, amend, or revise their comprehensive plans no more than once every year. That's by statute. And that is also codified in our code 40560. That section provides guidance and criteria for individual property owners to once a year ask for the site-specific plan amendment, and we also include dockets, which we come to the commissioners once every year or in the beginning of every year and identify how many annual reviews and dockets that we have and ask for the board to include that in our work program. When we do that, you open it, we start that process in September of every year, and we don't complete that. We complete it towards the fall of every year, and the action of the board to become effective January of every year. So we are now engaged by statute to complete the 2016 plan update halfway towards the completion, towards the end of the year. So I'm asking the board that's my bullet three, that if you allow plan amendment to be going forward while we are doing the plan, we may run amok when we adopt the plan in 2016 June, and you still have plan site specific annual reviews going on. We may be in violation of the state statute. So if we can postpone the plan amendment for 15 and 16, everyone, we will come back to being on an annual cycle beginning 2017.
Oliver, I know that in the past we talked about that, and a lot of it we had mapping mistakes we were trying to correct, and they were put off annually when they should have been done, you know, 5 years previously, if not sooner. So I have some concern doing that at this time. I'd like to review the RCW that you reference here, and then maybe have a one-on-one also, so I have a better understanding of where we're going to go with that.
Sure. In the adopting resolution, you will see, and I'm checking with our legal counsel and they're on board, we will make an exceptions. Exceptions will include out-of-cycle amendments. It's required by statute. The other exception will be, which is emergencies. The board can have emergencies and ask us to do that. Obvious mapping errors, those will be exceptions. So we are not locking the door on the board. So there will be exceptions out of cycle as required by the state statute. Emergencies, when you declare emergency or pass emergency resolution that require us to do something relative to maybe development code that will impact the land use, that you can be able to do irrespective of this suspension. So there will be exceptions written in the adopting resolutions.
Well, I have the same concerns that Tom has, and I was going to bring that up on the suspending it for 15 and 16. It just,
So he would also like to have you have a one-on-one with him, bring him up to speed.
Yeah.
I would certainly like to do that if I can, on maybe sometime next week before your hearing, and I will have opportunity for, I thought Chris Horn was going to be here, but he's reviewing the adopting resolutions, and he will include exceptions so that you're not boxed in.
So that first RCW says that basically we're going to be updating the 26 our comp plan in 2016 as a result of completing this process. That's by June 30th, 2016, right? And if we end up doing something in 2015, then that would normally be adopted January 1st, 2016, so you end up with two major revisions in the same year.
Right.
So understand that we still have the provision for updating this year that would be adopted or implemented, made live January 1st, 2015, right?
That's correct. That's the one. For example, although the one we did with Washougal yesterday was mandated through the court, so that you can do out of cycle. It doesn't bind you to the once a year.
And the exceptions that we talked about for corrections, to make sure that we don't just simply put everything on hold in order to correct what needs to be, what in a timely way ought to be corrected, there are provisions in that same RCW that would allow us to be able to handle those and not consider that a regular scheduled plan update, right?
That's correct, Commissioner. And it is also in our code, and we are carrying that forward in the adopting resolution that you'll be reviewing, so that what we are proposing to the commissioners is consistent with the RCW and our code. There will be exceptions. And, you know, I'll leave it at that, but there will be an exception.
After the stormwater situation that the county's had, I don't want to see the same mistake made here, end up with a financial obligation back to the county or lawsuits like it's already been mentioned here. So I want to make sure that all the bases are covered.
Okay.
That's all I have, and I'll move to the next steps. You have a hearing coming up on June 24th. Hopefully we'll have the cities chime in on the allocation and whatever language that or policy language or tools that Richfield will provide us will become part of what you finally adopt. I'm hoping that I will get to the cities and have something that we can all agree on. So, but you have your hearing coming up on the 24th. You will be having hearings on these same items that I discussed with you today and taking testimony. The public are here. You may ask them questions, but this will give you the opportunity to hear from the public and take testimony. And then the decision coming out of that hearing is what we'll put into a resolution that you will have to adopt. The next steps include on item two, as I mentioned, we've already scheduled four open houses to begin the environmental threshold determination, and all the cities here are aware of that, and we want to partner with them when we come out to their community to be in support and be at the table sharing with their own constituents what is it that they're doing, and hopefully we'll come out of that with a better process. The third item there is that with that we'll then move into the development of land use alternatives, which will be what will then be determining with public input what level of environmental review we have to do. So that's really where we are going forward, and the cities can chime in. I've already put them on notice on the dates we have for the open houses in their communities, so I'm expecting them to be there. That summarizes and concludes my work sessions. I'll take questions.
Work in progress. So we'll be back 24th to have some public comment. Yes.
I'm wondering if we ought to invite CREDC and Jeff Swanson to be able to also have a voice here to be able to give us a little insight if they want to be able to contribute anything. Is that appropriate, Mr. Chairman?
No, but we can. You asked me, I told you. So, Jeff, you want to make a comment? Do you have anything you might want to add? I knew... yeah. So... CREDC, Economic Development, Clark County. Where are you going to get all those jobs?
Grab a mic, Jeff.
They're going to talk.
Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this in the work session. Our Land for Jobs Committee is going to be meeting this afternoon and going over the numbers presented here today. So I'll have a little bit more detailed feedback for you from our group on the jobs allocation. Certainly we support the numbers there, and we'll just be looking at the different cities and what we see as opportunities and where that is and how that relates back to CFPs. And just making sure that it makes sense based on the portfolio of recruitments we see. So from just a purely job standpoint, I certainly appreciate the approach that commissioners are taking, and I'll try to provide that record in detail for you that'll help support that case.
Morning, Commissioners. Jeff Swanson, Clark County Economic Development. I've been working closely with CREDC. I sit on their Land for Jobs Committee. I've been working closely with Oliver and with a number of the cities represented here as well, and so I'm closely involved in the process going forward here, and I'm comfortable with the assumptions that have been presented to you. So thanks for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
And just the last point, I assume that the ports are also participating in collaborative partners in this as well. Are we making sure that they're included with whatever? Not in this?
We are reaching out to the ports. The effort that Jeff is leading includes the port, and all this information too. I've had one meeting in which I invited all the port, including EDC. That's when we were formulating the job targets. As we go through the allocation, as Mike indicated, if they have concerns, I would like to come to their meeting and share what is it that we are doing, and I want them input. I want their input. So I'm open to go talk to them or any other organizations. I want the cities also to be on board. But I think the effort that Jeff been making the ports at the table, and I'm more than willing to continue to coordinate and meet with them.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope with the Economic Development Council looking at the numbers this afternoon, if they run across something there with all the voices there, that they might make sure that it comes back to the folks here to make sure it gets incorporated or at least have a discussion about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Brent Granning from the Port of Richfield serves on our committee there as well, too, and we're in active discussions with the Port of Vancouver and can certainly commit to following up with them and making sure that they're engaged. With the port specifically, it's more about, from a jobs density standpoint, making sure we ground truth that information. It's a lot of times some of the unique activity that happens at a port may or may not be consistent with what's put on there as far as the jobs per acre or whatever that utilization is. So that's typically been our main concern there, and we'll make sure we follow up with that.
All right. I think we're all on the right track. We appreciate everybody helping out here. Don't be silent. We are interested in this thing. So, Eric, comment.
And a picture this
time. No pictures, okay. That means I can say so much.
It kind of does. Yeah. We talked previously at another work session about the infrastructure factor and the 27%, and I mentioned before possibly doing a weighted average, because one thing it doesn't account for is the changing soil types as we increase the urban growth boundary, and not all land is created equal. There's, when you look at an assumption like 27% for infrastructure, that's probably appropriate, and I'll kind of hold this up so you can see. This is a paper that the local chapter of the American Society of Civil Engineers did, looking at the impact of infrastructure and stormwater based on the soil types in Clark County. And we kind of put them in three broad categories. The green is moderate to high infiltration.
very little impact from the new stormwater regulations. The yellow is low to moderate. And what you get in there is not a situation where you really need a lot more area, but it increases the cost of the facilities. Then you get into the red area, and that's where you need significantly more land. And it's not a small factor. It's a significant amount more. So what I brought up before was there's been a lot of talk about the 27% being appropriate. And, you know, I would agree with that in the green. And in the yellow, 27 to 30% probably is appropriate. And it starts getting more costly. So you look at the feasibility of the property developing, mm-hmm. not necessarily needing more land. You get into the red, and 27 is not even close. When you look at doing projects, and I've heard, can you give me examples? I can't give you that many examples, because right now, developing under the new stormwater regulations in the red area just isn't happening. So if you want to look at like real examples, they're not feasible right now with the land value the way they are. So when you look at it, going forward, trying to apply this 27% to these areas that are red on this map, I think is a mistake, and I think we can do better on the assumption.
Wow, that's amazing. We have on the other hand of that, we have farmers talking about soil. Preservation of agricultural land because of soil, and that was one of the big issues at the Ridge Le Cintre Junction of that. And what they're saying is that we have a lack of good soil, and they want to preserve that. So, but you mm-hmm. show something different.
Well, you look at some of these red areas; they're not bad agricultural soils. They're poor soils to deal with infiltration and development. When you're trying to cover them up with impervious surface, there's nowhere for the water to go. They go to the waterways, they go to wetlands, they don't soak in. So that, there's different qualities of soil for development versus agriculture. There's lots of different uses. But
I see our county logo on this, and I assume this came from our own GIS department.
It did, yeah. There was the committee that put this together. There was participation from several cities and the county, and this was put together by county. It should be a layer now in the GIS system. So if we're going to look at an approach of doing more of a weighted average, I think you could put together a pretty simple if statement in the equation to look at those categories and apply a different rate and come up with a more appropriate weighted average.
So I would think that in order for us to be able to move forward, be able to see what we're doing on the map, we'd have to have kind of a collection toolbox that would include the relevant layers. That would talk about the zoning, these areas needed for stormwater, those basics. So I'm looking forward to making sure that our GIS department supports each of the jurisdictions so that when they get to it, they don't have to individually pull up something that would equip them to be able to start. They had to go to the comp plan update settings, and that template brings up what's relevant for this process for all the jurisdictions to be on the same page.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. We're only a half hour open.
One question. By putting a map together like this, can you show which land is more preference for industrial, which land is more preference for commercial, which land is more preference for residential?
This map really doesn't address that. It basically addresses the impact of stormwater, of the new stormwater regulations based on the soil type and how much land it's going to take to meet those requirements. And cost. From my experience, when you look at what's more appropriate for jobs creating land in general, it tends to be more tied to the availability of infrastructure than and the location based on...
If it's for wetlands type thing, it's not going to be good for industrial use unless you cover it up with crushed rock or something else like big, layers of rock and stuff like that. Commercial, somewhat residential, maybe a little easier to get
What this does say is if you're trying to put a large box, industrial, commercial, anything, any use really, you try to put it on the red, you're going to need more land to serve the same need than if you put it in the green. So when you're looking at the vacant lands and the factors of how much pure amount of land we need to bring in, regardless of the population projections and job factors, if it's in different zones, you're going to need more land to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Good point. All right. Anything else? I don't see anything at this time.
No, thank you, commissioners.
Thank you all again.
And the cities, thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Yes.
It's working. Some testimony, all right.
Eric.
Yes.
Great contribution. Very good.
Thank you.